It's dark as shit out there, so flirt, flirt, flirt. Have a three-way tonight. Make me happy, all right? This is shipwreck, not friend wreck. All right.
Jane,
hey.
Motherfucking Eyre.
We finally fucking did Jane Eyre.
I've been fighting for years.
You have, and we finally got around to it, and it's another one of those ones where people were fucking all up in my inbox begging to write for this show. So it always makes me super happy again when everybody like really loves the book and can make fun of it from a place of already loving the book and having read it, because those are the best stories in my opinion. And this was like one of the greatest crops of stories in like the history of stories. I can't even stand to think about how funny this show was. It makes me angry. Oh, you beautiful fucking geniuses, all of you. So this was our Valentine's Day show, which I always call that, even though it's like two entire weeks before Valentine's Day. But that's okay.
It's as good as it's going to get.
Yeah, it's as close as we're ever going to get. So we finally did Jane Eyre. I have to say, I gave the shout out at the show, even though no one was... This is the show that nobody was interested in. They were like, shut up, Amy, more stories. I was like, sure, fine. anyway, I was saying during the show, I didn't read the book. However, I listened to it because the fucking audiobook on Audible is narrated by Tandy Newton. It's incredible. It's like watching live theater. I have never heard one woman contain so many voices and accents. It blew my fucking mind. Like, to the point where Alan and I were like yelling at Jane Eyre because we were so pumped about how good it was. Like, it was unreal.
Tandy!
She's so fucking good! We like took this really long drive and just listened to it the whole time, and I'm still not over it. We haven't finished it because we keep listening to it in like chunks we never want it to end, because we just want to listen to her like do her Rochester voice till the end of time. Highly, highly, highly recommend. And I'm recommending a thing that's owned by Amazon, so you know I really mean it.
That's a ringing endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how they get endorsed, ringingly?
Yes.
Fantastic.
It sounds totally legit.
Excellent.
Excellent.
I'm such a huge fan of this book.
Great. So you can do the character intros, because I don't completely remember who Bessie Lee is. Do you?
Well, now I'm gonna blow it.
Wasn't Bessie?
Bessie's the she's the
nanny, or the
nice nanny,
the nice one, right?
From when Jane's a child,
right?
But then later she pops up
at
the Rochester
right?
place because she's working at the neighbor's house or some shit.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows, and she's like, "Oh, Jane, you know, you was always my favorite. Oh, goodness."
Yeah.
That's it. Like, she's just the friendly sir. But like, it makes you aware of how small this fucking place is. Like, that she got sent away and came back to live someplace else, but somehow
it was still
like
walkable.
That servant is like at this new house in another town where they've never heard of her.
Yeah, it's like, well, I think when we think like you get sent far away, it's like I'm moving to New York, but like really it's like I'm going to like the next big field.
Yeah, like you've got 5 cents. How
it's
far can you get
crazy.
With 5 cents?
Yeah. So I was like, that's awfully convenient, but like, maybe it's probably not, actually. It's probably...
I don't know. It's probably pretty convenient. She was like, I don't even have to come up with a new character.
Pretty likely inconvenient, yeah. I don't even have to come up with a new character.
This one from earlier will do here.
Our first story tonight, children, is titled News of Gateshead Hall. Jane Eyre had been a little cunt as a child. Still... Bessie had a soft spot for her in her ample bosom. It wasn't the child's fault that she was an orphan, but she did so go on and on about it. And now here was Jane, all grown up and a proper young lady educated at Lowood School. And though not as fetching as either of them, Miss Reed's, Jane's black frock did offset her milky complexion, reminding Bessie of a pearl necklace she'd once seen on Mrs. Reed. "Well, now, Miss Jane," Bessie said, "you may not recognize me." Bessie patted her broad, spreading hips. "I've grown quite stout, more for Robert to grab when he plows my fields." A look of pure ecstasy swept across Jane's pouty features. In a heartbeat, she was squealing, "Bessie, Bessie, oh, Bessie." Then Jane embraced the maid. kissing her fervently, clinging to her like a wet chemise. The ardency of her greeting gladdened Bessie's heart and did much to chasten her early accounting of the child. "Come, Bessie," cried Jane rapturously. "Let us sit in the parlor beside the fire. You must tell me all the news from Gateshead Hall. Do it, do it, do it." Bessie settled on the plush crimson settee. Jane angled herself to rest upon welcoming folds of her maid's lap. "Oh, fee, Miss Jane, you are too old to sit upon my lap," Bessie exclaimed, pushing Jane Eyre's tight ass out of her face. "Such behavior!" Jane settled herself beside Bessie, admonished but expectant. "What of John and Eliza and Georgiana?" Jane asked. The girl's eagerness was so endearing that Bessie overlooked the sloppy lap dance. Pleased to be able to share the intimate details of life at Gateshead Hall in Jane's long absence. "Is Georgiana comely?" Jane asked. "Indeed, miss," Bessie exclaimed, with a throaty laugh. "Ha, ha, 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 ha. She went up to London last winter with Mrs. Reed and came out to the thrill of many a man and a good few of the young ladies as well. After her turn on the Maypole, Miss Georgiana caught the eye of a certain young lord. He promised her marriage, but the cretin used her cruelly as a cum dumpster." Bessie sighed. "Still, it's not as bad as all that. Whoring seems to agree with Miss Georgiana." Jane stared, mouth open. "What had Mrs. Reed to say of this?" she asked. "Mrs. Reed returned to Gateshead in a right state," Bessie confessed. "I thought she'd pop her corset. Miss Abbott bade me fetch Mr. Lloyd, the apothecary. Miss Abbott said she would undress Mrs. Reed so that she might rest, and that Miss Abbott would see to it no one else would molest the madame in her repose. But Miss Jane, the moaning that ejaculated from Mrs. Reed's chamber went on for days. Such a caterwauling that I was compelled to run and see if there wasn't something amiss." Bessie paused and drew breath. "Jane, my dear girl, there's a bloom to your cheeks. Are you feverish?" Bessie asked, noting with concern that Jane Eyre did not look at all like herself. The girl nodded. Her eyes were as wide as a horse twat on Sunday. Jane whispered, "What happened then?" "Bless me, miss, I entered quiet as a mouse and mindful of what Miss Abbott said about not molesting Mrs. Reed in her repose, and I was glad to see that Mrs. Reed was indeed still in her repose. She was laid out upon the snowy Marseille counterpane, naked, her hands in her beaver muff. You know, Mrs. Reed must have been ravenous because she was calling with urgency for more, but Mr. Lloyd, the apothecary, was ever so attentive, and he administered the hot beef injection." "Mrs. Reed!" Jane exclaimed, her hand fluttering to her heaving breast. "Whatever wasn't that injection worked wonders on Mrs. Reed," Bessie happily divulged, "although Mr. Lloyd needed to administer it several times a day." "And what of John Reed?" Jane asked, her voice thick and tremulous. Bessie sighed. Mrs. Reed had such hopes for Master John. The law, and short of that, the seminary. But Master John never encountered a law that he didn't want to flaunt, and the only way he could bend his knee as a priest was to gobble a knob. Indeed, the world about London was Master John had sucked more... The word about London was that Master John had sucked more cock than Miss Georgiana. But it was his debts that right fucked him in the ass. Buggered from Whitehall to Piccadilly was he. His creditors took their pound of flesh, and Master John took a pounding, if you get my meaning. Whatever else could be said of the young master, he got what was coming to him. Oh, bless me, miss. I meant he got what was coming on him. Coming all over him. Coming to him. You know what I mean. Lord, yes. Yes, yes, yes. He got what was coming to him. Those prepositions are troublesome. Bessie fanned herself. "It's quite warm in here," she commented. "Why, Miss Jane, you are trembling. News of Gateshead has had a most unwholesome effect on you." Jane grabbed Bessie's hand. What of you, Bessie? Please. Oh, tell me. Tell me you are happy. Bessie patted Jane's hand comfortingly. I married these 5 years to Robert Levin, the coachman, and hung like one of his horses is that man. So I'm pretty much great. And I'm ever so partial to his rear mounting. But my Robert is a bit of a traditionalist. His parents are missionaries. But he was blessed with a quick tongue. So much so that I'm often breathless with wonder. I couldn't be more satisfied. But that's enough about me. What about you, Miss Jane? You've grown into a genteel lady, not much to look at. But as my old gran used to say, looks don't matter when they're nose deep in your slit. Still, I bet you are as clever as ever, Miss Jane. Do you play? Well, I do a little fingering, said Jane, prettily, rising from the settee to go to the piano to show her dexterity. She brought the crescendo to a climax, and Bessie clapped in delight. Miss Georgiana and Miss Eliza never had fingers as deft as you, Miss Jane. Can you draw? I paint landscapes mostly, Jane confided. What, like bushes and shrubs? Bessie asked. Jane nodded. Mm-hmm, mountains and cracks too. Yes, she added, then pausing, biting her lip. And the occasional dripping grotto. Oh, have you learned French? Bessie asked. Jane leaned over and whispered into Bessie's ear, Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? Bessie smiled and pressed her hands to her heart. Jane, you ignorant little slut. There is hope for you yet. The end.
That was Bessie Lee, as written by Tina LeCount Myers.
So we threw Rochester right up at the top so we can get him out of the way, because I fucking hate that guy. He's a monster. That was the thing I learned finally reading this goddamn book, is like, everyone's romantic ideals are trash, garbage, horrible men.
They're so bad.
What it's the like, fuck?
He's like, well, I've made a mockery of my life and I'm still married, but I'll marry you because you're a trash person and no one will say that's wrong.
I could see myself verbally abusing you for the next 30 years.
You're so witty by thinking that I'm tolerable.
Our next story, children, is titled Mr. Rochester and Everyone. Mr. Rochester's collar was too tight. It brought the blood to his face and made his neck stiff, the way it always felt when Jane was doing the governess voice. A stiff neck was undignified. He hated being undignified. He preferred to look like he was thinking deep and unhappy thoughts. Go to the library and play the piano, he commanded in his most commanding voice. I won't, she said. We need to talk about ectoplasm. And then you need a spanking. No, he said. Yes, he said. Ectoplasm? A sticky white substance of spiritual energy that comes from ghosts and we're all obsessed with because it's 1847. And everyone's dying of consumption. Right, Mr. Rochester said. By the way, there's a brunch seance at the Fairfax this next Sunday. Are we going? You're changing the subject, Jane said. Tell me more, he said. Don't you hear the screams and laughter in the house at night? This morning I woke up to find ectoplasm everywhere. On the sheets, on the drapery, on my face. I mean, that was kind of nice. I kind of liked it on my face. I've told you, this house is still haunted and you've done nothing to fix it and that just won't do. Assume the position, hands flat. Sorry, hand flat. Outside, the wind blew upon the moors. No, he said. Yes, he said. With as much dignity as he could muster, Mr. Rochester set both his forearms and his single hand flat on the mahogany card table and his eye on Jane. He regretted that he couldn't see as well as he used to, but he knew her smell, which was a little like Cliffs of Dover and a little like English muffin. And he felt the rush of air as she put her schooling to good use. And, of course, he could hear really hard spanking sound effects. "I want you to count down from 100, she said, "and I want you to say, thank you, governess." They had barely gotten to 77 when there was a knock at the door. Alex Fairfax entered. The woman was always interrupting scenes. Mr. Rochester was brusque. Miss Fairfax was brusker. "With your consent, Mr. Rochester," she ventured, pulling a riding crop from between the folds of her matronly skirts, "I think you need a moral adjustment." "No," he said. "Yes, yes," he said. But it sounded more like, "Yes, muffled," because Jane pressed his face into the table. Jane smiled. "After you," she said. Mr. Rochester felt them clasping hands over his body and a touching display of female friendship. Sound effect, a writing crop applied to the fleshy bits of Mr. Rochester's thighs. "I was just telling Mr. Rochester about last night," Jane said. The women blushed. There was a knock at the door. It was St. John, the cousin. "I thought we were done with this one," Mr. Rochester said. "I am," said Jane, "but I thought Mrs. Fairfax might like a crack at him." It turned out the cousin was tired of the missionary vocation, but positioned behind Mrs. Fairfax, he found something more useful to be than an imperialist nuisance in India. There was a knock at the door. The servants, whose names are John and his wife, entered. Good evening, they said. "We would like you to know that despite being servants, we're actually people. And we should like to participate in scenes sometimes." Mr. Rochester, who, like any big house gentleman, was in need of a good pair of hands downstairs, so he was delighted. "So it's like this then," said Jane. "I'm left to care for myself. But guess what? There was a knock at the door." Two aloof, gloomy gentlemen entered. "It's Mr. Heathcliff and Mr. Darcy," said Jane. "Or is it Mr. Darcy and Mr. Heathcliff? We can have an emo trio then?" Wait, no, said Mr. Rochester, untangling himself from John and his wife. "These guys feel a lot like versions of me. I'm feeling some jealousy coming up." "They can always play with each other," said Mrs. Fairfax, ever the voice of reason. No, yes, said Mr. Darcy and Heathcliff, who had never thought of that. Sound effect of buttons popping off breeches and the squish squish of two gloomy, depressed cocks being mutually fondled. "Room for Jesus?" asked St. John. "Always," they all said. Which left Mrs. Fairfax and Jane face to face. Mrs. Fairfax opened her mouth to speak. Jane put a finger on her lips. "Shush," she said. "There's too much talking in this novel." They looked at each other. They closed the distance. Sound effect, two women kissing. Patriarchy being smashed. The door slammed open. Charlotte Bronte stormed in. No, she said. Stop it. You're going to out me. You have no control over us, Mr. Rochester said. Of course I do, said Charlotte. Who do you think you are? You're me. And seeing disbelief across his mysterious eyes, which really weren't that mysterious, she invited him to investigate with a hand down his pants. Why? It's ectoplasm, he said, surprised. You've unmanned me. Don't be ridiculous, she said. You're still Mr. Rochester, as it is a truth universally acknowledged that a gentleman in possession of a cunt is still a gentleman. I should have written that line. Charlotte, said Jane, why ectoplasm? because this is a novel. We've been dead for hundreds of years. So I guess it doesn't matter anyway. Okay, may I join your party? I am pretty good with rope. Gladly, said Jane. This house is fancy and full of great attachment points. Sound effect, rope unrolling. The door was smashed to pieces. There was the entire village of Bakewell under Thornfield. Excuse me, all of the villagers said. We're poor and couldn't help but notice you're living in a mansion. We thought we could come live with you? Given consent, of course. Also, we'd love to join the sexy party. There is only one problem, Mr. Rochester said. This dark, mysterious house is not big enough for our class and gender-defying, kinky, polyamorous, living dead love. Where can we go? Where will we put the commune? And sing along if you've heard this one. But our Jane looked out the windows upon the wide, soft expanse of Wuthering Lands, in which there was plenty of room for all the stories. And with a rebel yell, she cried, more, more, more. So out of the big house, they all went together. And then it was only Jane and Mr. Rochester staring at one another, breathing hard. You're not that pretty, he said. Neither are you, she said. And you're a terrible communicator. And your love languages are highly confusing. But I'm such a pervert for you. Wanker, where were we? 77, he said, breathing hard. Thank you, governess. Mr. Darcy said, oh dear. St. John found God. Mrs. Fairfax shot something pale and white across the moors. The entire village of Bakewell under Thornfield came as one. All of them, orgasm after orgasm. Mr. Rochester cried, Jane! Jane! And between all of them, there was so much ectoplasm everywhere that the pages were sticky and the covers of the book stayed open to this happy page forever because, reader, I'm still janing off to them. The end.
That was Rochester as written by Carson Becker. Mr. Rochester.
So Blanche was like the perfect blonde chick that was all up on Rochester and who he led on for like a long time.
Yeah, like they were engaged.
Yeah.
Our next story tonight, children, is titled Lady Equestrian Seeks Bag of Money to Gallop at Her Side. Reader, if you have ever known the pleasure of taking someone down a peg, you are probably a beta bitch. It's okay. Not all of us can be statuesque raven-haired beauties with the figure of a Dian, but I can and am. That's why Blanche Ingram always gets her way. That's me, if you couldn't guess. After a fortnight of charades, horseback riding, and having my fortune told by a mysterious old hag, I had waited long enough for Mr. Rochester and his money to propose to me. I was going to corner him and make him do it. After cornering him in his study, I heard a knock. A word, sir? It was that fucking buzzkill, Jane Eyre. If you don't leave here right now, I said, I'm going to get rid of you the same way I got rid of all my governesses, by chasing them with sticks and setting them on fire. Jane was undeterred. Put your money where your mouth is, princess. You want to throw down? I'm Jane. Which was really strange. But I felt something then stirring in my loins. Being demeaned always does this to me, TBH. But I would not be distracted. I would make Mr. Rochester propose. Mr. Rochester, I said, you might find Jane amusing for the moment, but, I sneered, she lacks a certain something, don't you think? Would a governess do this, I asked, lifting my skirts to reveal a bare ankle? Would a governess do this, I asked, dropping a handkerchief at his feet? Yeah. What about this, I asked, with triumph, batting my eyelashes at him really, really quickly. I was the loosest girl at Thornfield Hall. Yeah. Jane looked incensed. Do you think I am an automaton? A machine without feelings? Do you think because I am poor, obscure, plain and little, I don't know how to fuck? Because I do. I know how to fuck. Mr. Rochester looked from her to me and back again, very perplexed. But still, he licked his lips. Do you think because I was starved for food and affection at an underfunded British boarding school that I know nothing of desire? Do you know how we entertained ourselves? Do you know how we kept warm some nights? No, I said, with my vaginal lips throbbing. Why don't you show me? Reader, I am not proud of this, but there she was, this little twig I could have crushed with one hand, yelling at me, alluding to carnal appetites and positioning herself as my superior. Of course, I wanted more. More. Mr. Rochester, whose trousers were now around his ankles, spoke up. Now fight, or kiss or something, I don't know, he said, masturbating furiously. Oh, Jane. Jane, I knew you were the one. What? Jane and I asked. I thought I was the one, I added. Of course not, Mr. Rochester said, caressing his own thighs as he spoke. The best way to get the girl you want is to make her think she has zero chance of ever being with you because you're already chosen someone else. He pinched his own nipples. Works every time. You torture her secret feelings by lavishing praise on this other woman who is inferior in every way. Hey, I said, furious, but also sopping wet. Mr. Rochester quivered with pleasure. You make the object of your desire believe that your taste in women is unsalvageable and that she is basically dead to you. That's how you get her. It's a foolproof plan. Reader, I was incensed. Who was he to prefer the short, book-smart, live-in employee to me, a tall gold digger? As you know, I am a well-traveled man, Messire. Please, open my suitcase of treasures and take anything that pleases you. You want thingamabobs? Get in line. Stick around and I'll show you exactly how many wonders one cavern can hold. Then she opened the suitcase. Benoit Ball's impressive. Honey dust delicious. And what's this? Bronze dildos and jade butt plugs from China? They're ancient, he said, gesturing grandly with his erection. Stolen from an emperor's grave. He grew visibly harder. A hand crank vibrator in case anyone's feeling hysterical? I am. I am, Messire, I said. Quite. I knew she was freaky, Mr. Rochester told me. I've seen her watercolors. I've seen them. All right. Enough yapping, said Jane. I want you stripped and kneeling on the floor. We both did as we were told. Govern me, governess, I said. No talking out of turn, growled Jane, striking me across the face with a ruler. The safe word is Hindustani. Reader, we fucked. The first thing Jane did was slap me across the face and knuckles with her ruler, hissing, "You're a mean girl, Blanche Ingram. You're a bitch." Then she pushed me onto all fours and started spanking me, insulting me all the while. I, of course, was in ecstasy. Mr. Rochester got in on it too, spanking and spitting on me. Ah, yes! I looked over my shoulder just as their eyes met above my reddening ass cheeks. They threw themselves at each other, completely forgetting about me. So I reached for that contemporary timey vibrator and enjoyed the show. Mr. Rochester's dick, the harpoon, Jane Eyre, his white whale. It was kind of beautiful and gross. Then she reached for that ancient Chinese dildo and drove it deep into Mr. Rochester's. Oh, I shan't say it. Always wanted to do this, Jane said as Mr. Rochester grunted. I lay back, revving the DIY vibrator up to 11. Mr. Rochester's grunts turned into moans and then bizarre exclamations. Spanish Town! The West Indies! Spanish Town! The West Indies! Jane pulled out of them, then reached for a second dildo, saying, cleanliness is godliness. A squirm through and through. She thrust that Bronze Age Chinese dong into my deepest crevice, crouching behind me and driving it with her pelvis. Behind Jane, Mr. Rochester thrust into her, transforming us into a six-legged beast, or maybe 12 if you count arms. Then the door burst open, revealing a bedraggled-looking woman with long tangles of black hair. Who is that? Jane and I yelled at the same time. While we scrambled to cover ourselves, the woman set fire to a curtain and cackled. Ha ha! Never mind her, Mr. Rochester said, struggling to push her out of the room. I'll explain later. I'll explain later. Maybe. Let her stay, Jane said. She took a candle from the mystery woman, stood above my still crouching form, and poured hot wax down my chest. Oh, I felt my skin turn to second-degree burns as I came. Jane and Mr. Rochester writhed together on the floor in front of me as that woman ambled through the room, setting small fires and laughing. Ha ha! But still, I didn't care. Let her watch whoever she was. This was hot. And as the room burned down around us and we continued unfazed shoving body parts and ancient relics inside each other's orifices, I reflected on the day Jane was not merely a frumpy governess. She was also a cold bitch. The candle wax had left its mark on my body, and Jane had left hers on my heart. Mr. Rochester could eat a dick, though. The end.
That was Blanche Ingram, as written by Sarah Lynn Rogers. It's also the winning entry for the evening.
Oh, God, that story was so fucking good. So good. And she'll be back in, I don't know when this is going to come out. She'll be back next month, though. She'll be back for April.
Yeah, she's been back.
She's been back.
Who knows what she did?
Hey, and then we decided we were going to be dicks and assign somebody the Herald Classifieds because... that's how Jane removes herself from her when she's at school, right?
She gets her first governess gig out of the Craigslist of the time.
By advertising on fucking Craigslist.
Our next story, children, is titled The Orphanshire Herald. Here we go. The Orphanshire... Sorry. Now it sounds weird in my head. Orphanshire. Orphanshire. Okay. The Orphanshire Herald. On this day of our Lord, May the 22nd, 1847. Classified advertisements. Lonely apothecary seeks lavender marriage to daughter... with hot father. Gentlemen, I beseech thee, I am but a lonely apothecary, 67 years of age, whose flesh is withering like a daisy in the autumn twilight. I long for the distractions of companionship, and perchance a few more pleasures of the flesh, ere my flame of life is snuffed out forevermore. I own a humble business, pulling in about £500 per annum, where I make house calls to the lowliest of servants, orphans, and unwanted stepchildren. It's filthy business indeed, but after nearly 20 years in its practice, I have acquired a dozen or so acres of land in Orphanshire, where I keep an intimate staff of servants. In short, I am more than capable of providing materially for a well-born lady with sensitive tastes. Despite my modest success, I find myself so terribly alone. I wander the corridors of my country home, reminiscing of springtimes long ago when I romped with my fellow college chums, skinny dipping, running naked through fields, delighting in each other's cocks as the first honeysuckles of summer. Oh, how the halls of my anus still echo with their boyish laughter. Those were the gay old days indeed. A pity the old boys have all since died of typhus. I should very much like to cross swords on one last occasion, perhaps play the roles of swashbuckling butt pirates. But back to the matter at hand. My dear old mom, God rest her soul, neglected to secure me a marriage before she kicked the proverbial bucket. And it is so much work to look for a wife and run a business at the same time, especially when I have no strong inclinations towards women. Their lack of education, profession, or pants. Their insistence on describing their feelings and private consciousnesses at length, as if to create a sort of historical record of women in the Victorian era. Oh, it makes them all sound so hopelessly dull. We ought to raise our women as we do our men, if only to make conversation with them more bearable. Nay, it is male companionship that I seek. Long hunting trips, you know the ones. Evenings full of brandy and cigars. Passionate thrusting of our bangers and mash. Why, even I, as I write this appeal, find my own Union Jack rising to half-mast. Perhaps as I scribble this advertisement, I shall slip off my trousers and give the old billiards some air. And I hope, dear reader, that you shall do the same. In any case, I would gladly do away with the whole marriage affair altogether and live my life as a confirmed bachelor. Only Daddy insists I carry on the Lloyd name. After all, we are now four generations of apothecaries. In his final act of tyranny, or so one hopes, the old buzzard has refused to write me into his will until my neck fits securely through the noose of matrimony. There need not be any wretched offspring from this marriage, thank God. Daddy is sure to follow Mommy to the grave in a season or two, God be good. It will suffice for him to see me wed. Why, perhaps the excitement of the wedding will be enough to finish the old fart off once and for all. But anyway, I so propose an equitable exchange for a newer, naughtier daddy out there. A gentleman of the world, who has tasted some of the finer things in life and waits not for heaven's providence to bestow eternal bliss, but yields to some of his more animal instincts. Even better, a well-cultured father, perhaps, who appreciates the fine arts, the mythologies of the ancient Greeks, the hard-bodied sculptures of the Renaissance. Perhaps you enjoyed playing Hippolyta in an all-male production of A Midsummer Night's Dream. To you, Daddy, I direct the following inquiries. Is your daughter homely and unkempt? Does she babble on to dreadful lengths about women's suffrage or the plight of the poor? Instead of batting her eyes like a quiet little dove, was she perchance shown up at her own debutante ball by a prettier or more talented cousin? Perhaps you have an unwanted stepchild who you keep locked up in a dreary red bedroom. As caretaker to many an unwanted child, I have seen it all, and I promise to pass no judgment on her circumstances. Your circumstances, on the other hand, dear reader, are of great interest to me. I can just imagine it now, sir. We ride our horses through the English countryside. Our hindquarters sore from hours of bouncing up and down on stiff leather saddles. We happen upon a remote cabin in which I keep well stocked with brandy, cigars, and snuff. After all, I am an apothecary. I am certain to have a salve or two handy for whatever ails you. Even the occasional case of the old bashful groundhog is no match for my medical expertise. Why, in this particular fantasy, I may have a bit of sandalwood oil to rub into those aching thighs of yours. And if I happen to slip a little into the chasm between your lower cheeks, well, I would always rather be happy than dignified. In fact, maybe you have your own college chums you might like to invite along for a grand hunting expedition. We shall leave our wives in the drawing room to play an elaborate game of charades or whatever the devil women do these days as we ride out in force to storm each other's impregnable fortresses with our fearful battering rams like Roman legionnaires of old who first brought civilization, not to mention nude wrestling, to the British Isles. I will gladly play the part of the lady if you so desire. Indeed, I've had my housekeeper order some dresses for my future bride, which I have already taken for a spin with my valet. I must say there is nothing quite so invigorating as spending an hour or more with another man as he delicately secures every button, garter, corset, skirt, and petticoat with a steady hand. It's a wonder my mass head doesn't tear through these delicate garments just writing about it. But you, sir, as in Christmas morning, will have the pleasure of unwrapping me, perhaps then stuffing me with coal, for I am a very naughty and in dire need of a firm but loving paternal hand. After all, we will be but two gentlemen bound by marriage. There's nothing peculiar at all about a father getting to know his new son-in-law, or an annual, or perhaps monthly, or perhaps weekly hunting trip. You never know. If your wife troubles you, you can easily claim that she's a mad woman and lock her in an attic. You know, guy stuff. I've seen it done many, many times before. You need not worry about the prying eyes of a gentleman doctor. He'll simply teach her to treat her hysteria with her own hand, and then he'll be on his merry way, no questions asked. Address your response along with an accurate sketch of your face and member to Mr. Lloyd, Post Office, Orphanshire. The end.
That was The Herald Classifieds as written by Alan Leggett. Alan Leggett. Fun fact about Alan Leggett.
Oh?
He is my co-host Amy's live-in man partner.
It's true. He only locked me in an attic once.
They met on the Craigslist of the times.
He brings me coffee every morning and then throws it in my face. No, I'm kidding. Calls me ugly.
I stab him, of course.
Of course. As one we does. Met in an orange grove or whatever. They met in an orange. They like there's a lot of grove walking. I don't remember.
I think that he was like part of a financial trip to bilk her father, and the father was like, "Fine, I'll buy whatever your widgets, but you have to marry my daughter and employ my son."
No, I think you're thinking of Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beef.
All right. Hey, back on track. Hey, we got Jane Eyre up next. Eponymous heroine. Hey, did I use that word correctly? I think I did.
Our next story, children, is titled Jane Eyre's Affair. Rochester huffed and with a final thrust collapsed on top of Jane, who hadn't even come close to coming. Rochester let out a long, obnoxious orgasm. Turned out being married to Rochester was no picnic. Maybe it was the fact that there had been so much drama and excitement when they first got together. He had seemed dark and mysterious, and so far above Jane's status. He had a crazy wife in an attic, so he had experienced being married before. You'd think this would make him better at it, or at least better in the boudoir. His crazy ex-wife, Bertha, had burned down Rochester's mansion, killing herself and leaving him blind in the process. Nothing more intoxicating than a powerful man that suddenly needs you. Despite all that had happened, he hadn't changed much from his old selfish self. He was no Michael Fassbender. He rolled off Jane and almost immediately started snoring. It looked like another night of fingering herself to sweet release, if she could even muster the will to do that. Just as her fingers started to slip down to her clitoris, a spot she was almost positive Rochester couldn't find even if he wasn't blind, she heard a creak at the door. Jane froze. Glancing towards the door at the foot of the four-poster bed, she saw that the bedroom door was slightly ajar, and a soft glowing light trickled through. She could not quite make out a silhouette, but then all at once, a woman emerged from behind the door. Despite the darkness of the room, a faint light appeared to be emanating from her. "Hello, Jane Eyre, or should I say, Jane Rochester." The woman's voice seemed to pierce right into Jane's soul, much like her round, bright eyes.
How do you know my name?" she stammered.
"Ha! My name is Charlotte Bronte," the woman replied. "I created you. I'm sorry I saddled you with that lot. That wasn't good." She nodded towards the sleeping lump that was Rochester. "Powerful man, am I right? Can't live with him, can't live without him. Sadly for you, I didn't know what toxic masculinity was at the time. When I wrote that part of the story, I had no clue," she winked suggestively to Jane, as if she was about to share a dirty secret. "Let's just say when you've been dead as long as I have, you become more woke to things." Jane didn't know who this woman was or what she was talking about, but from her experience dealing with Bertha, it was best not to make sudden movements with a crazy person in your bedroom. "Look, I am fully prepared to make it up to you, though. I'm here to help you realize your deepest fantasies, Jane. I'm just going to stand over here and let the magic happen." Charlotte crossed to the other side of the room and folded her arms across her chest, facing towards the door. Jane heard soft footsteps approaching, and then another figure emerged through the doorway. A slender, womanly figure glided into the room. Her white, translucent dressing gown glowed in the moonlight, revealing the outline of breasts as round as pomegranates. A slim waist and curvy hips, she had a tumble of red hair like a flame surrounding her shoulders that she tossed aside, looking at Jane curiously with eyes that even in the dim lighting were familiar to Jane.
"My lord, Helen, is that you?"
"Helen Burns?" Jane said in shock. It had been years since her old school friend had perished in the orphanage when they were just 10 years old, and now she stood before her, a grown and extremely sexy woman. Helen's luscious lips spread with a smile. "I've been burning to see you, my old flame, even if it meant I had to come back from the dead to do it." Jane flushed. It had been so long since she'd seen Helen. As she watched her run her tongue along the rim of her bottom lip, she recalled how they had stolen a kiss that day at the orphanage when nobody was around. Since that day, she had buried those feelings for her old schoolmate and had fancied herself in love with Rochester. Now the strange fluttering in her chest upon seeing Helen again was telling a different story. Helen stepped closer, and her dressing gown parted, revealing that all she was wearing were a pair of silk stockings held up by garters attached to a barely there thong, sporting, that held a long red dildo. Jane unconsciously scooted forward on the bed until she was sitting on the very edge as Helen stood just inches in front of her. "Do you burn for me, Jane, as I do for you?" Helen whispered, letting the gown fall away to the floor.
Oh God, yes, 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 yes," Jane murmured, reaching forward to touch Helen.
Suddenly, Helen seized Jane's hands and pinned them down on either side of the four poster. In that case, be a good girl and let me ignite your desires, Helen said, deftly unhooking her garters with a free hand, tying them around Jane's wrist and attaching the other ends to either bedpost, leaving Jane restrained. Jane's brain faintly registered that Rochester was still in the room. But his steady, muffled snoring beside her reassured her that he was sound asleep. Helen got down on her knees and dipped down between Jane's legs, softly kissing up the inside of her thighs and sending a shiver through Jane's body. Jane gasped as Helen's hot tongue licked the center of her pleasure, flickering between the folds like embers igniting into a flame. Helen slipped in a long finger and further stroked Jane's fire. When the sensation became so intense that Jane felt she'd explode, Helen pulled away and looked into Jane's eyes deeply. Please, Helen. I need more, Jane begged. Oh, we're just getting started, love. Helen smiled mischievously. She bent her head and circled the rim of Jane's nipple with her tongue, and then nibbled, eliciting a soft moan from Jane. She teased the other nipple with one hand, while the other traced the curve of Jane's spine down to her butt, and then squeezed. Jane slipped her hands through Helen's garters and seized Helen's red mane of hair, pulling her face towards hers to plant a hungry kiss on her lips. The two women were so involved with each other that they didn't notice that Rochester had woken up and was staring at them silently nearby. Dumbfounded, but also turned on. He thought about how he could turn this twosome into a threesome, of course. Eyes widening and hand gripping his stiffening cock as he watched Helen plunge her huge red dildo, regretfully much larger than his own member, into Jane from behind. Suddenly, the bed became scalding hot. Rochester quickly rolled off and fell to the floor, dick flopping to the side like an old sock. He stared in disbelief as Helen and Jane continued to writhe in passion, even as traces of steam started to escape from the surface of the bed. That is what you call a fiery passion. Yes, came a voice from behind him. He started and whirled around to see Charlotte for the first time, standing over him with an eyebrow raised like a mother about to reprimand a naughty child. It's what I should have originally written, Charlotte continued wistfully, gazing back at the couple in the bed, which was now emitting larger quantities of smoke by the second. Rochester backed away, coughing, still seeing the shadows of Helen and Jane through the smoke, still moving together as one, even as the bed erupted into flames. Jane's last thought in the living world before she passed over into Helen's was that she was so unspeakably happy to be reunited with her friend and true soulmate. The end.
That was Jane Eyre, is written by Tessa Gregory.
Sanjin Rivers. Remind me his deal. I know it was pronounced weird.
She goes wandering, like, she goes hungry for, like, a day.
That's
like,
right.
She gets off of a bus.
Like, oh, right. This is the part where after she finds out that Rochester has the wife in the attic and yeah. She leaves.
She's like, I'm taking my 15 pence and going about my way.
My
and she takes
skirts.
The bus to,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Poor Town. And she's, like, wandering around Poor Town. And people are like,
the
you
horse
literally
bus.
Can't
she takes
buy-
the horse bus.
Yeah. She's like, could I give you one of my mittens for a biscuit? And they're like, I don't even know if you stole those. And even if I knew, I would not sell you a biscuit for those mittens.
Yeah.
And then she goes to the church and they're like, no, he's burying his dad. And then she like spies on the family through the window, Frankenstein Jesus. Style. Like she's like, oh, how warm it looks in there. While yeah. and then it turns out that he's the parish priest.
Mm.
And she lives with him and like paints portraits and shit.
And doesn't he want to marry her, but she says no.
No, he wants to marry this chick that he has a crush on.
Okay.
And she's like, what if I painted a cameo of her that you could give her as a gift? A miniature.
Oh, so she's his wingman.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, she wingmans it.
I'm there.
I'm kind of trying my best to remember that part, but yeah, there's okay. I know that there's a
mini. I know there was someone else she almost married before she went back to what's his nuts.
Yeah, there's some other dude. And I feel, well, there's, okay, so there's a guy that shows up at some point who's just a total, like, creepazoid.
I mean, that narrows it down.
Yeah. He's just like, I'm here to eat sandwiches and marry you, Jane. I'm a made-up character because Casey can't remember this third act of the book.
I mean, we're only, like, eking our way through the third act, which is why I don't remember. Yeah, it's fine.
St. John Rivers kept his Bible in his front pocket because he was a clergyman, and it was nice to have something hard to cover his boner. The Bible went to good use that morning in the gardens around Thornfield Hall when St. John glimpsed Jane Eyre, though he only had a half chub. Hello, Sister Jane, St. John said as she approached. He could tell it was her by her independent nature and unbroken hymen. I'm sorry, she called back, her cheeks flushed with confusion. New Victorian Manor House, who dis? It is I, your cousin slash ex-fiance slash would be an eight after five beers, St. John Rivers. Oh, Jane exclaimed with delight. Is that how you pronounce it? Dude, I've been calling you like San Juan for the last 30 pages. No, dear girl, it's Sin Jin, like the sins I don't commit, you know, and the gin I don't drink. Well, about that, what? It's so inconvenient to see you, Jane said, and threw her arms around him, but Sin Jin wrestled out of her embrace. He was a clergyman and commanded by the Lord to cover up his schlong with his Bible, like a Catholic bishop covering up a sex scandal. Please. Where is the lie? Please, Jane, St. John said sternly. No touchy-touchy. Jane gave him a look that spoke straight to his shortcomings. She knew, deep down, that he could never do that thing with his pinky Rochester could do. Nor did he have a freaky dungeon wife for her to menage with on Tuesday afternoons. Jane searched for polite conversation. San Juan, she said at last. What color are your balls this morning? St. John smiled. Restraint was his thing, so much his thing, that his balls were now a beautiful shade of indigo. Like two sapphires clacking around in his pants. Look at the sky, Sister Jane, St. John said stoically, but also pensively. The Lord has seen fit to match its hue to the blue of my balls. Jane giggled. Dear cousin, you're not showing your giblets to the Lord, are you? Jane, he scolded. You must know that my giblets are for the Lord's eyes only. Jane did not have time for this. Her clit was sweating like a Republican senator on Judgment Day. And the gorgeous, unhinged Bertha Mason was just 100 yards and 8 padlocks away. Well, cousin, I bid you good day. Jane curtsied and sped off to get hers. Lose my number, bitch, she yelled back to him. St. John scolded himself. He was a clergyman. He had more important things to do than listen to women. He found a bench, opened his Bible, and stuck his hand down his pants. He'd chosen the Old Testament that morning because God's wrath felt like a band-aid for his daddy issues. St. John opened to Jonah 1:17, and the Lord provided a huge whale to swallow Jonah. I bet it was huge, St. John thought as he fingered his sky blue balls. I bet it was really huge. Jonah was within the whale's belly for days and days. Yeah, so deep in that belly, St. John said. and then moaned aloud, so deep. Normally, he'd stop his disdainful diddling right there, but he was mad, too mad, that a petticoat-burning, book-reading Jezebel Jane had just walked off like that. St. John's fondling turned into stroking, and with each heave, he was transported further and further into the story of Jonah. He closed his eyes, and when he opened them again, St. John was in a large red room with a round skylight. No, not a room. A throat. Hello? 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 He called into the darkness. Just a minute, someone yelled back. Then a young man appeared, wearing a loincloth and a pink apron. I had no idea you were coming, the man said. I'm just tidying up. Excuse me, who are you? I'm Jonah. St. John dropped to his knees to pray. He'd never met a biblical figure before. Jonah, he said, blessed prophet, I am unworthy. You're fine. Jonah said, look, I'm just a houseboy around here. St. John arose. Houseboy? What does that mean? You know, I polish the tonsils and pleasure the whale when he's horny. Suddenly, they felt a rumbling under their feet. Oh, looks like I'm about to be on the clock. But how? How do you pleasure the whale? Jonah pointed to what St. John had thought was a skylight through the blowhole. There it was. Look, up there. Hello, the blowhole. Just ask Ahab. Then, from out of the shadows, hobbled Captain Ahab. Captain Ahab, who belongs in absolutely every whale story. He pointed his leg at St. John. Yarr, he growled. Yarr, 'tis true, my whole body was the only dick that could fuck Moby Dick. So that's what they call deep-throating, St. John said. But wait, why not just fiddle his fuck fin? Sweetheart, a blue whale's cock is like 10 feet long, Jonah explained. Sure, all Herman Melville characters are power bottoms, but... Not even Grand Canyon Ahab can take a blue whale's harpoon. Yarr, Ahab concurred. I lost me leg trying. Another rumbling came from beneath them. Oh, the whale's getting hornier. We'll have to get him off pronto. St. John found his courage. I'll do it, he said. I'll do it. But solemnly, but also seriously, his entire religious life had been leading up to this moment. Are you sure? Jonah asked. Ahab and I were going to rock, paper, scissors for it. I've never been so sure of anything in my entire life. But first, St. John caught his breath, I'll need a little help. Then he pulled his frock over his head, unlaced his trousers, and waggled his shepherd's staff at Jonah. Oh, okay, my pleasure, Jonah said. And in an instant, he was on his knees, running his tongue from St. John's church all the way to his steeple. St. John's pleasure was his own prayer. After a few glorious slicks and some deep throats, Ahab yelled, he's harder than a gangplank. It was true. His cock was as rigid as his morals. St. John looked off to the side and said, I spy a whale that needs fucking. They lubricated him with whale spit. Then Jonah grabbed one leg, Ahab the other, and they hoisted him up through the blowhole. St. John could see miles of open ocean, as blue as his balls. Yarr, hold on to the top, Ahab yelled. We'll take care of the thrusts. St. John held the edges of the blowhole while Jonah and Ahab pulled him in and out, in and out, in and out. His hard cock rang against the whale's blubbery G-spot like a church bell. And the blessed beast shook and moaned in whale song. St. John could feel his priest prick bruising each time it met the whale's tough skin. But he didn't care. The blubber was sardine-scented ecstasy. The whale sang again. I'm gonna come. Me too, St. John hollered. And as his own brutalized bishop erupted, a geyser of water shot him into the air. St. John opened his eyes. He was back in the garden, his hand cupping two, goddammit, perfectly pink testicles. Was it all a dream? He tried to turn the pages of his Bible, but all the pages in the book of Jonah were stuck together. The end. Thank you, guys.
That was St. John Rivers, as written by Zoe Young.
Zoe, she's been dying to write for a long time, and she was so pumped about this. And she is so funny, and I can't wait for her to write again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take that.
So that was Jane Eyre, finally, and at long last.
You lived
the
it.
The podcast was almost as much fun as the show. We went into a lot of attics for this one. Yeah. That's good.
Oh, Amy. What a great thing we do here.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
How often do we do it?
All the time.
Like,
there's a new one every month.
Constantly. Constantly. Just all the time, every day.
Like,
this is a fan fiction.
If you subscribe, you're going to hear more new episodes on a regular basis.
But also, we do the show live on the first Thursday of every month, which is what I was trying to get you to say and failing.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Potter.
Casey, what are you talking about?
I don't know anymore.
Who knows? Who cares?
Well, because then I started thinking about Harry Podcast.
Harry Podcast. Funny, why is that so funny? Harry Podcast.
Really? You like it?
Really? You like it? Anyway, we're here on the first Thursday of every month at the Booksmith in the Upper Haight in San Francisco for a live show that costs $15. And, well, it's 12, actually. It's 12 and then 15 at the door. But it comes with an open bar, so lots of wine and beer. We get pretty silly. We talk about books. And, the reader of your stories that you just heard was Baruch Porras Hernandez, our fearless reader. Follow him on the socials for lots of dick pics, not of his own, but drawings of other people's. And, you know, come see our bookstore in three dimensions and buy our book. That's what I got.
True story. You had to be there.
Don't forget to like it.
Forget to like and subscribe.
End every episode with that. It's so stupid.
They just grind it. Do you think they're just tossing these lobsters in the old lobster grinder?
The food processor.
The lobsters are trying to claw their way out.
Oh, I'm sad now.
You know, the lobster grinder.
Grinder!
That's called a food processor, Casey.
Oh, Lord. All right.